With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public, free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom, and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Time for our legal hub this Wednesday morning here at RCR. Katie Ashby-Coppins is in the house. Hi, Katie.
Good morning, Paul. Good morning, listeners. It's so good to be here with you this morning.
Okay, some things to chat about over the next period of time that you are with us this morning. Yesterday, and our listeners heard the chat this morning with Rebecca Barnett, the journalist based in Perth, talking about what we're just about to talk to. And at that time, when we chatted yesterday, and it was kind of mid-afternoon, the decision from the Australian Federal Court on, well, you know what, hadn't come down, and I'll get you to explain it. But now in kind of real time, we're talking, we know what that decision was. Tell us
yeah,
about.
Yeah, so I think the decision was handed down, but it wasn't yet published. So there's often a bit of a delay. So that explains it. So often I'll get a decision if I'm a, if I'm the lawyer on a case, I'll get the decision and then they take a wee while to get it up on the site. So that's the reason for the delay. Anyway, it's landed. So our session today is entirely about freedom of speech and the like. And this is an incredible decision. I think it's an important decision. It's not a fence-sitting position, but it is a little bit. So, you know, the federal court, which is, I guess, the equivalent of the High Court in New Zealand, denied the eSafety Commissioner's request to enforce X, or formerly Twitter, from playing any of the footage of the Wakerley stabbing in Sydney. And the decision, and where it comes down to, was that the Justice Kennett said there was reasonable steps taken to stop or block the stabbing content as required under Australian law, and that the eSafety's request for a global ban was not reasonable. So okay. That's really important, keeping it within the jurisdiction, not expanding. And the judge clearly said that the 65 links or URLs that were on X Corp's platform, it was not reasonable to injunct or stop or block those from being available. It is inaccessible to Australian users as far as I understand, but it's available elsewhere.
Yeah, okay, that's one thing, but still we've got the issue of freedom of speech, but now it's a local issue. In Australia, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And so the reasoning for that has been accepted, or is seen as not unreasonable.
Not unreasonable to restrict the footage in Australia.
Do you think it's unreasonable?
I think it's news on any other. It would be news footage in any other time.
I remember watching a BBC report. Would have been in the early 90s when South Africa was really turning to custard, you know, before Nelson Mandela was released and all of that. And it was a brutal killing that had been filmed and was shown on the news. And what they did was say, you know, they put out a warning and said, this is distressing, do not watch. But they did play it. And that's like how many years ago? 30 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you often have situations like that that get played out and the ghastly part of the images are blocked out, but at the end of the day it's still a news item. We've got this real issue that we keep seeing over and over again, which is this desire to keep everybody safe. Let's regulate everyone to keep them safe from themselves, keep them safe from rock fishing, keep them safe from viruses. It's essentially another huge area of income, but it's another huge industry. But it's it's just this desire to want to keep people safe. And there's got to be a balance and a risk assessment of things. And is people keeping people safe over this issue? What's the consequences? Versus, you know, the cost at going to this level of effort to block all of the media around it, including globally, impacting on a global corporation. It's a good decision. I don't think probably it was time or necessary, but the eSafety Commissioner needed to get one run on the board because, you know, it's a new role and, you know, she's desperate to prove herself.
Okay. Now, Rebecca told us, part of the interview that folks heard not too long ago, that it was because it was classified as a terror attack that sort of unlocked the powers. Yet, we had the Bondi.
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
And footage of that could be played, and that was seen as some kind of misogynistic, murderous attack on women. You'd think, in a way, that was more serious, more scary, more
absolutely
lacking safety. And then you had the issue of the priest, excuse me, who was okay with the footage of what happened to him, no one else, him, being public. So it's kind of all over the show, it seems to me, but I'm just simple. I could be missing something.
Yeah, look, and incredible that happened in the same week, same place, essentially, and you had these two different interpretations on it. I think, you know, Christchurch call kind of had a resonating...
Because it was live-streamed, is that...
Yeah, well, that no, what? It's just the Christchurch call, you know, that we've got this thing being set up that's to, you know, protect messaging and things like that.
Yeah, but the big thing there was the live stream, wasn't it? And it was
absolutely
live. Apparently the church attack was being live streamed. Well, it was live streamed because it was live stream coming from the church.
That's correct. That's correct. And so, you know, I recall in the Christchurch massacre that friends I know in Australia were watching live on Facebook what was unfolding. And, you know, I was just like, just turn that off. How could you watch that?
Well, you don't have to watch it, do you?
But you don't. That's exactly my response.
I didn't watch that, by the way.
I took responsibility for myself and didn't want to see it. So switched it, you know, just refused to see it while a girlfriend watched it. It's really the label they give to it, because that shopping centre event was awful to watch, but again, it was news. I don't know what the fear is. I don't know if there is a fear that there'll be more attacks, more reprisals, whether there will be more religious more religious attacks as a consequence. I don't know. What exactly are they keeping you safe from?
Good question. I don't know. Apart from inserting themselves in a role where they can have power over other people's choices.
Yeah, just another level of regulation. We always talk about that, Paul.
Yeah. So this would sit okay with the average Aussie, would it?
Your average ABC watching Aussie, which seems to be most politicians.
Okay.
I think they'll be a bit annoyed that they weren't able to get X on an injunction or blocked from the material. But, yeah, look, I think most average Australian will be, well, I guess,
or they
will
would be accept be agnostic. That decision.
Yeah, correct. They'll just accept it.
Yeah. And thinking you can close down that globally, I mean, that's kind of masters of the universe thinking, isn't it?
Or sheer arrogance. Look, there's a lot packed up in that. I understand that our eSafety Commissioner in Australia used to work for X and a few other bits and pieces. So who knows, maybe...
Ties with the WEF.
Maybe she's got an axe to grind. Who knows? But, I mean, it's good. The court is actually acting like a court. It would indicate there's a separation of powers, which I've questioned for quite some time. You know, and the court is willing to step in and hand down a judicial decision where this regulator was getting a little bit too full of her own power.
Yeah. I want to ask you about this because I know that you fronted a media conference. What was that about, and how was that for you? Just curious, quickly.
Yeah, so on Saturday in Melbourne, I ended up having the pleasure of running a press conference about my favourite subject, the WHO pandemic treaties.
Yeah.
And I was pretty stoked to be able to have a stellar lineup of gentlemen, experts, international experts at that, academics. I think I described one of them as having more degrees than a thermometer because he was I couldn't actually read out all of the qualifications because I would have wasted all of the time that we had scheduled for the press conference just telling people how qualified these guys were. So in respect of the WHO pandemic treaties with the Aligned Council of Australia, we invited out David Bell, Australian former WHO scientist and medical officer who was with the WHO for 11 years. Fascinating guy, all about public health policy, just thoroughly enjoyable, just getting to know him and being able to meet him in person. He's Australian, so he was very happy to come home. Then the Emeritus Professor Ramesh Thakur, who was a former UN General Secretary and is, you know, with Kofi Annan, you know, his stories are just incredible. And then I also had a constitutional lawyer and, or not lawyer, lecturer, Augusto Zimmerman from Western Australia, who was just absolutely fascinating, and there's just so much to learn. And then also Professor Ian Brighthope, who really gave us the steer on the health and is also one of the spearheads and speakers of and for the Aligned Council of Australia. So, yeah, I got 2 hours with these guys on a stage on Saturday, and I also have some good news. If you haven't heard already, I've managed to convince Dr. Ian Bell and Professor Ramesh Thakur to pop into New Zealand on.
We know about that.
Oh, you do?
We've been telling people.
Well, now there's a cherry on the top because I'm coming.
Oh, okay, even better.
So, no, it's going to be great. I'm so delighted to be able to have more time and, of course, to see everybody. But this is so important. And both of them, two of the presenters said, you know, this kind of work is the type of work that can make a change. Yeah. Getting people educated, getting people informed, you know, teaching our politicians about what these things are happening, what's going to happen under these things, rather than just getting a public servant's memo on what their interpretation is. These are guys that have worked for them.
Yeah.
Actually worked for the organization.
Yeah, so they know how it works on the inside. Boy, yeah. I bet they got some stories.
Ooh. Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure I don't know how much you'll be able to extract from them on the radio, but look, head along on Friday night because that is going to be fascinating.
You'll be there. I'm going to be there.
Fantastic.
Looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to meeting these men because I've chatted to them, I think, David, 3 times and Ramesh twice.
Mm.
So it's not as if I feel like I know them, but they're just such you know, smart people in the room. So that's going to be great. Were the media paying attention, Katie, at this thing?
Some media were. I think we had 10 press there, and we had about 3 press online. And I think the press online was probably the interesting ones because they weren't able to be there in person or didn't want to be there in person. But look, we had some really good questions from the press. We had a press, someone from the Canberra Daily. And then we had the Epoch Times. And I think we had someone from the Spectator perhaps on a Zoom link. So look, it was a really, really awesome day. Definitely need a press conference during weekdays because that's when the press work.
Yeah.
But look, it was really well received. We had over 130 people there in person. That's public as well as media, and then also 500 people online.
Oh, cool.
Watching the live stream. So that's been well received, picked up. Dr. Jessica Rose has shared that on her Substack. Meryl Nass has shared it on hers. It's really starting to get some traction. So that's the kind of messaging we need to get out there.
Well, if I need a news conference for anything, I know who to go to. Get it together.
There's
experience there.
I'll stay with the law firm.
That's great to hear. Okay, do you want to keep talking about or stay on the topic of pandemic treaties and censorship under them? Because we've got our own issue that I think we want to talk about here in New Zealand that's come of late that will be of interest. Anything more to say about censorship under the pandemic treaties?
Well, possibly just this. Under the pandemic treaties, or under the pandemic treaty, there is still a requirement for countries to censor mis and disinformation as defined by presumably the WHO. So we will have the situation where, you know, if this agreement, pandemic treaty or agreement gets up in at the end of May, whatever happens in New Zealand with our Department of Internal Affairs putting the kibosh on online safety, you know, we might still have some extra pressure that we'll have to implement something in the future about that, because these pandemic treaties say that countries must.
Well, I'm detecting there's been a slight uptick in awareness of this here. I got nothing scientific to base that on. It's just my feeling. More people seem to kind of have heard of it at least now.
Definitely, definitely, yeah. And that's really important. So the Department of Internal Affairs, you know, not going forward with the online safety code, I think is a huge sign of the people's pushback. I think it's probably also indicative of the fact that the country's broke and it's going to cost money to have another regulator. And also, how necessary is it? You know, people have to take care of themselves. They have to be aware of their own safety. You can't have someone wrapping you or shrouding you in cotton wool the whole time, every time you leave the house, or even if you're in your own bedroom, it would seem. I think it's a sign of a few things, but I do think it's a sign of an assessment of how necessary is this.
You just mentioned Department of Internal Affairs online safety. Were you surprised that that was like drop kicked? Seems
yeah.
to have been. You were
yeah.
surprised.
I really was surprised. I remember when we were preparing template responses to assist people with various suggestions. Goodness gracious, was that about July or August last
months
year?
Months and months ago it was. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yep.
we did it. We're doing that, you know, indicative of hate speech, because that was really what some of the suggestions were of to where it could go. And look, at the time of writing that, I didn't think that it would be kicked to touch. I thought, you know, the WHO pandemic treaties have these flavours in them. All of these online censorship has this in there. I just, you know, and we can see it in Canada, Ireland, everywhere. Everyone's just got Australia. Everyone's super excited about censoring online content. So I was really surprised that, you know, New Zealand's just dropped it.
It's an admission, really. Excuse me. It's an admission, really, isn't it? That, again, mainstream media has lost its grunt, its power. It's losing it.
Mm.
So then you've got to shift the control away from that to the new media. But it's all about control in the end.
It is absolutely all about control. That's absolutely right. Look, I was surprised that they dropped it, but we do have a new government. That's what's happened in between the intervening time of when we drafted those template responses to help people understand. And look, it's just a matter of timing. Our pendulum with that swung. We would never have been able to say anything. Reality Check Radio would probably not be able to be on air.
No, that's right.
And that was, you know, a real thing that we were considering when we were drafting all of this. You know, I wouldn't be able to sit in that room with the experts that I did on Saturday and have a conference with them, probably let alone, you know, amongst ourselves, let alone on a Zoom, let alone on a streamed press conference, under the rules and the guise of what was being proposed under these documents. It really is, I am very surprised, but it's also a change of government.
Yeah.
And people spoke and people said, no, we're not going to have this anymore. And the pendulum has swung back somewhat the other way.
And it could have been weaponized, because complaints can be made easily.
Oh, goodness
and
gracious.
They can
yes.
be ginned up. I mean, I think that's how it operated in Australia, isn't it? With the eSafety Commission. People make complaints. Complaints are assessed, and the case then becomes active. I can make a complaint about anything.
Oh, absolutely. And you've got to, and the person that you're complaining to needs to determine whether or not the complaint is vexatious. I remember rock radio, they would always get complaints, but they'd always get complaints from this one lady that would go through painfully and list all of
why are you listening
to the broadcasting standards. And everyone's like, why are you listening? Like, I mean, they were just naughty but fun. And this person, and I remember that the rock sat down one day and read out all the complaints that they'd received from this person. And honestly, I think it was a whole radio show in itself. But don't listen.
Yeah, that's the thing. Don't
get alive.
But the people receiving the complaint should also know that. People shouldn't be listening. Anyway, we can go on about that forever.
We could.
It's a bit of a short, truncated Legal Hub today compared to the others. I also want to get your reaction to the people's terms being presented to Winston Peters, because you had a big hand in that. I know that. That must, you know, we don't want to sit around sort of being too self-satisfied, but that must have made you feel good. It made me feel good seeing that. It really did.
It gives me a lot of hope in my heart that there was an acknowledgement that the current terms of the Labor inquiry are inadequate, but not just that we were able to submit those people's terms and have 33,000 people say, hey, you guys wrote some pretty good terms, I'm quite happy to put my name to this, but then to actually have a government, a part of the government come out and accept them.
The Deputy Prime Minister, actually.
It's just... I was on a high and a bit elated, and definitely had some hope in my heart. I appreciate the difficult position that they're in with getting this over the line, because ACT has the portfolio that's looking after the Royal Commission. But look, with that piece that came out about Tony Blakely, I think his name is, the other day in the Herald of all places,
Kate McNamara's piece, yeah.
Even on the current Labor terms, he has to withdraw himself or recuse himself, given his breadth of his witch's tentacles went into the New Zealand response, and the fact that his advice was relied upon, even though it was unofficial. That's got to implode the Royal Commission, and under the inquiries legislation, it can do. And there's only going to be one guy left. And the fact is that he's the only one that's heard the very selective evidence that's been collected behind closed doors.
So that sort of rules him out, does it?
Look, I think you just want to start again.
Yeah.
You just need to start again. But the thing is it needs to probably get cracking pretty quickly. In Australia, for example, there was also a finding, I'm sure I mentioned it, I think it might have happened where we were when we went on, the Community and Legal Select Committee returned their report on the full terms of inquiry that we asked for and pressed for here in Australia. And they've come back with 3 pages of pretty full inquiry, saying yes, we need a full we need this inquiry, and this is what it needs to cover. So I've got a little bit of hope. At least in New Zealand, we have an inquiry in place. There's not even one running yet in Australia.
All right. Well, I think that's about time for us this morning. This Legal Hub. Great work, Katie.
Thank you. It's
what a winner.
It's so good to see it all come to fruition and actually have some success.
Yeah. All right. And I look forward to seeing you in person on Friday and meeting a lot of other folks who are going to be there. Our listeners and supporters that make all this possible. That's this Friday in Auckland, and www.realitycheck.radio/WHO. And you, if you want to find out the venue and buy tickets, we'll see you then, Katie. And thanks for coming back on.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Have a lovely day, everybody.
If Reality Check Radio enriches your day in life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and the dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.